what are the relationships as we look at the Trinity? Or better yet, let me ask it this way. What is the practical application of the doctrine of Trinity to human community? I remember once preaching on the doctrine of the Trinity. Several times I have done this. Actually, it's a high value. I believe if you come into a community, it's one of the first things you should begin with. I can remember years ago, too, telling this kind of humorous story that I went to a church once. I was candidating. It's a weird term we give to looking at whether or not a person should be a pastor of a church if they're candidating. It bothers me a little bit. But nevertheless, I was candidating at this church, and the former senior pastor had a meltdown. He'd gone off the deep end morally. And they had brought me in. And this former senior pastor was extremely rigid. He was one of these kinds of people who says, "My way is Yahweh." Their doctrinal statement for a membership of the church was about 16 pages long. The circle was drawn so tight. And it was a very large church, however, but I felt that there was so much there that was built up to the ego needs of this particular man. When they interviewed me at the church, they said, "What do you think of our doctrinal statement?" And I said, "Well, unfortunately, I think your doctrinal statement was condemned as heresy at the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD. They said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, your doctrinal statement says that Jesus Christ is the incarnation of God the Father. In fact, he is not. Jesus Christ is the incarnation of God the Son, and because you've confused the persons of the Godhead, you've engaged in the kind of thing that was condemned at Nicaea, that was called Sabellian modalism, where they confused the persons of God. It's kind of a chameleon God. He turns brown, he turns green, or he changes hats when he wants to do a father role, son role, and so on." So they were shocked by that. They said, "Wow, nobody's ever pointed this out to us, but frankly, our doctrinal statement, when this church was formed 100 years ago, those who formed the church said we could never touch a doctrinal statement without dissolving the charter of the church. Those are too many legal hoops for us to jump through. We're not going to do this." It was interesting to me that they had extended the doctrine of inerrancy to a human doctrine of the church doctrinal statement. I can see why the people who started the church probably did that, because they wanted to protect the theology of that church over the years. But unfortunately, they didn't realize that their doctrine or their document was a human document. Second question is, "What do you think of drinking?" That was the second question they asked me. I was surprised that they did that. I thought they'd maybe ask me about the two natures of Christ, my philosophy of ministry, about my relationship with my wife, especially since the former pastor had fallen apart. But I thought this was crazy. So I said, "Well, I'll have a glass of wine at the evening at dinner, and maybe if I'm with some friends, I might have a little bit of single malt scotch or something like that." But I said, I'm a very temperate drinker. I don't ever drink to excess and so on. And they said, "Oh, well, you can be a member at this church if you drink, but you can't be on the staff if you drink. As a matter of fact, if you're on the staff, you can never have had a drink in your life, so you're not a candidate here anymore." So I started to pack up. That's fine. And this one elder said, "What do you think of that?" And I said, "Well, if that's the standard you have for leadership, that's okay. That helps you clear the field and sort of focus on who you can get to be your next pastor." He said, "What do you really think about it?" I said, "I think it's remarkable that you have a doctrinal statement that's heretical, that would make you a cult and not a Christian church, and you have a standard for leadership that would keep Jesus or the Apostle Paul from serving on your staff. It's remarkable, the nonsensical thing that was going on there." But at another church, I was preaching about the Trinity, and this man came up to me, and he was furious at me. He says, "Why are you preaching about the Trinity? Such an embarrassing doctrine for us. One God, three gods. We would be better off if we jettison this whole thing. Why is this so important to you?" And I said, "Sir, my name's Jerry. What's your name?" And he said, "Well, my name's Mike." I said, "And this woman that you're with, is this your wife?" He said, "Yes." I said, "What's her name?" He said, "Priscilla." I said, are these your children?" He said, "No, these are her children. My children live with their mother in Cincinnati." I said, "Well, sir, first off, I would say to you, the doctrine of the Trinity would be nonsense if we said one God, three gods, but we don't say that. If you take the early councils of the church, you could distill it down to simply this. There's one God, eternally existent in three persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. They make a distinction between God and persons. One God, eternally existent in three persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Second person has two natures, human and divine. Now, I don't know the sadnesses that have occurred in your life, but clearly there have been some, because there's been a fracturing in your family and a fracturing in your wife's family. Maybe there's been death or loss of life, or maybe there's been divorce. But we live in a world of broken relationships. What could be more relevant in that broken world than at the core of the universe is a relationship that is perfect? And we can look to God and grow in our understanding of His love for us so that it allows us to look honestly at our failures, and we can look at Him and grow and understand what true community looks like as we see it modeled in Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.